My job as a writer, as an activist, as a philanthropist, as a feminist, is to create awareness and to say, okay, this is what I see. This is the world I know. This is what's happening abroad. Come with me. Let's see. Let's look.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a portrait of award-winning Chilean writer Isabel Allende. In 1982, Isabel Allende was living in Venezuela as a political refugee. That's where she wrote her breakout novel, La Casa de los Espíritus, The House of Spirits, which later was adapted into a film.
She seems to spend most of her time in another world since Rosa's death.
I know.
Not because she can't speak, she just never wanted to.
I know.
Throughout her extensive career, she would go on to write 22 more novels, many of them infused with her specific blend of magical realism and myth. But Isabel actually started writing by working as a journalist in Chile. Isabel was born in Peru and grew up in Chile, but in 1973, she fled with her family to Venezuela after her uncle, former Chilean president Salvador Allende, was overthrown in a bloody coup and died.
The Pinochet regime says the socialist leader took his own life as the presidential palace came under attack. But some, although not Allende's family, dispute that, saying he was gunned down by Pinochet's men.
Since then, she's become one of the most influential authors of our time. She was the first ever Spanish language writer to receive an honorary National Book Award, which is one of American literature's most prestigious honors. And former President Barack Obama awarded her the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2014.
Her novels and memoirs tell of families, magic, romance, oppression, violence, redemption.
I sat down with Isabel Allende to talk about her life's journey, the country she left behind, and what it's like to become a renowned author. Isabel Allende, welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you very much for having me, Maria.
So, Isabel, can you take us back to Chile, to when you were growing up, and paint a picture of the memories that you have of that time?
I think that the first memories of childhood mark us forever. Many other things have happened to me in my life, but what marked me really were the first 10 years of my life in my grandfather's house in Chile. My father left my mother when I was 3 years old. He abandoned the family and we never saw him again. He totally, totally vanished. My grandmother died and the house became a house of mourning. For 8 years. My grandfather dressed in black from head to toe. He painted the furniture black. There was no music, no flowers, no parties, no dessert. It was a house in mourning. I don't think that was a common thing at all in Chile at the time, or ever, that people would mourn like that. All that gave me the idea that everything is possible, my dear, that the world is a very mysterious place, and that if that happens in real life, why not in literature? So what has been called magic realism as a literary device, in my case, and I'm sure that in the case of many other Latin American writers, it was a reality. That's how we grew up.
And you know, what's interesting is that you do write about the spirit world and what gets left behind. So there's a lot of that kind of mystical and mysticism in your writing, but you actually started out as a journalist doing work that was basically rooted in fact, and that was all happening before you became a writer.
Hi, Maria. I was a lousy journalist. I should have never done that.
What do you mean? What made you such a bad journalist?
Oh, I lied all the time. I made up stories. Yeah, I put myself in the middle of everything. I couldn't be objective. I didn't believe in facts.
But you knew. You said, I'm ruining this profession. I've got to get out of it.
No, I was expelled, let's say. What happened is that I was a journalist and I thought I was a great journalist because I had no insight in my own problems.
So were you working as a journalist when your uncle, the president, Salvador Allende of Chile, was overthrown?
Allende was the world's first democratically elected Marxist. On September 11th, 1973, his dead body was pulled out from the National Palace during a U.S.-backed military coup.
Yeah. I was a journalist, and we had censorship. I mean, censorship for everything, but mostly for the press. So it was very hard to work as a journalist in those circumstances. But especially with my name, it was particularly difficult. And then we had the military coup in Chile, and I had to get out. And I couldn't find a job as a journalist in Venezuela. I left because I was scared. I was in some blacklist. I was threatened. I felt that it was just too risky. So I left with the idea that in a few months, I would be back because Chile had such a long democratic tradition that we could expect that the military would go back to their barracks and we would have elections again, which did not happen for 17 years.
Every year, thousands of Chileans mark the day that ended the rule of socialist leader Salvador Allende and started the 17-year dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet.
So then what was it like to actually to emigrate to Venezuela in the context of actually being a refugee?
To move to Venezuela, warm, green, abundant, rich. It was the second richest country in the world because of the oil boom. A country that was ready to party all the time. People would find any excuse to have a drink and to dance and to play music. That's not the Chilean spirit. We are serious people, you know, we talk politics. We are very different. So for me, it was a cultural shock. And also, the fact that when you leave your country in a hurry as a refugee, you leave behind everything, not only your country, but all your past. No one knew who I was or what I had done before, and nobody cared. You're a refugee is way worse than being an immigrant, because as a refugee, you have very little choices. As an immigrant, you have chosen to go to a place and start a new life. You don't look back. As a refugee, you're always unpacked, ready to leave again, to go back to your country.
So take us to that point where you're struggling as a journalist, and then you move into the sphere of writing. Like, what was that like to walk away from journalism and say, I'm going to do this, the writing?
I didn't know what I was doing. I was living in Venezuela as a political refugee. I was working administering a school, which is not the kind of job that I'm good at. And then my grandfather was dying in Chile. I couldn't return to bid him farewell. And I started writing a letter that turned into my first novel. I had no idea what it was. If it was a memoir, I had no plan. I just wrote like in a trance for a year. And at the end of the year, I had 500 pages on the kitchen counter, stained with coffee and soup. And that was my manuscript. An Argentinian writer, Tomás Eloy Martínez, was passing through Venezuela and he heard that I had a manuscript. He said, you know what? If you want to get published, you need an agent. No one can publish today without an agent. And he gave me the name of Carmen Balcells in Barcelona. And so I found her address and I sent her the manuscript. And she accepted to be my agent. She said something interesting. She said, this is a very good book, but everybody can write a good first book. The writer is proven on the second book. In the first book, you pour out everything you have. And you don't save anything for the future. So it's the second book that makes you really a writer. And that's how I got started.
Coming up on Latino USA, we continue our conversation with Isabel Allende and why her most recent novels have central characters who are refugees. Stay with us. No te vayas.
NPR's Code Switch is a podcast about race in America that's about all of us, our histories, how we're represented, the ways we've worked together and worked against each other. You'll learn, you might get mad, you'll definitely laugh, but don't take my word for it. Just listen to NPR's Code Switch.
Hey, we're back. And when we left off, we learned about Isabel Allende's life as a journalist in Chile before she was forced to flee as a political refugee to Venezuela, where she wrote her first novel. Since then, she's moved to the United States, where she has now sold over 73 million copies of her novels. In this part of our conversation, I talked to Isabel about some of her more recent work and how in these times, she's been drawn to writing about the immigrant and refugee experience across the globe. Let's get back to our conversation. This has been a particularly challenging time for those of us who are either refugees or immigrants. And you've talked about how this experience of displacement, actually, it was the thing that forced you in many ways to become a writer. And I've been wondering, Isabel, what are you thinking as you look at the faces of these migrants who have been displaced, the people who are asking for refugee status in the United States?
It breaks my heart. My three latest books all deal with refugees in different moments in the world when people have had to flee and find a home somewhere else and how difficult that is. Now, we are getting these masses of people that are running away from these broken countries and the United States doesn't want to help. Doesn't want to give them what they are owed. It breaks my heart, especially when I see the young kids, the children.
Can you talk for a little bit about In the Midst of Winter? This particular novel is about an undocumented Guatemalan in the United States. Tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind The Midst of Winter.
The character of Evangelina Ortega in the book, she's a young Guatemalan girl in a village, in a poor village in Guatemala, who is completely taken over by the most powerful gang. The government is inefficient. The police is corrupt. She has no safety anywhere. Her brothers are assassinated. Her family is decimated. And she's left alone, raped and beaten up with her grandmother. And so the grandmother says, you have to get out. Because you know who these people are. You can identify them. Just get out. And so the girl starts a harrowing trip alone, across all of Mexico, in terrible circumstances, and comes to the United States, where she lives in clandestinity. She lives in hiding, undocumented, terrified of being caught and deported, and of course, exploited because of her situation. And the other two characters are one Chilean journalist who has lived in exile during the time of the dictatorship, so she knows what this is about. And a professor of political science who is the son of a Holocaust survivor. So he also knows what it is to be a refugee. And these three characters go together in some kind of adventure that forces them to take risks. And in that moment, they open their hearts and they find solidarity, compassion, friendship, laughter, love.
Isabel, you have dealt with so much loss. You've lost children. And I just wonder how you dealt with this loss in your life and in your writing.
Maria, most of the time when I have been placed in those crossroads in life, when something horrible or dramatic or a tragedy happens, you don't have many choices. There's no alternative but to survive and to face it the best way you can. I feel that I have received so much, that life is so brilliant and wonderful, that it compensates for every loss that I have had. And when I am in that stage of loss, I always feel that I have inside the potential or the seed for happiness. In my book, In the Midst of Winter, I start the book with a quote by Albert Camus that says, "In the midst of winter, I finally found in me an invincible summer." And I think that that summarizes how I have seen my journey in my life. I have been in long winters, emotional winters, but I have always had the invincible summer inside. And if I give it a chance, it will emerge. And I think we all carry that possibility.
So I found it interesting, Isabel, that in an interview with The Guardian, you talked about how even though you've had all of this success as a writer, it's only been relatively recently that you say that you've actually become confident as a writer. Can you talk about what that means for you?
First of all, Maria, as you know, every story has a way of being told. What you used for one story, you cannot apply in another one. There's no formula for this. There's instinct. And I always had the feeling that the story came to me like a gift. And then my job is to work around it so that I can find the narrative voice, that I can find the way of telling it, but the story comes intact in a way. And only recently, I have found out that if I sit long enough with something, I will find the way. I will find the narrative voice. And I'm sure that if you ask any creator of any kind, they will tell you the same thing, that you have to reinvent yourself and reinvent your craft every single time. So that makes you very insecure. At least it made me very insecure for a long time. But now, you know what? I don't care so much. I just want to connect, and that's it. If I can connect with someone honestly, and I can communicate that feeling to another person, I've done enough.
Isabel Allende, thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA.
Oh, thank you, Maria. It's been a pleasure.
Isabel Allende's latest novel, A Long Petal of the Sea, follows two young people as they flee the aftermath of the Spanish Civil War in search of a place to call home. This episode was produced by Maya Cueva and edited by Sofia Palizacá. The Latino USA team includes Fernanda Camarena, Miguel Macias, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Alisa Escarce, with help this week from Jeannie Montalvo. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our digital team includes Julio Ricardo Varela and Amanda Alcantara. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Fernanda Uriegas. Our intern is Adriana Tapia. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians, and the Wincote Foundation. Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Okay, Maria, I feel honored.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. When California legalized recreational marijuana, a billion-dollar industry was born. We find out whether people of color are cashing in on the so-called green rush.
Here I've been pounding out trying to get a measly $200,000 investment, and I'm too small to invest in.
That's next time on Latino USA.